This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and you tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Today on the show, we head to the heart of the city to check out a Muay Thai academy with a difference. But first up, here's our weekly news roundup on the good, the bad, and the ugly. As always, I'm with Harish Dio, editor of 2213. Welcome back to the program. You have three pieces of news for us this week. Let's start with the good.
Hi, Daryl, and thanks for having me once again.
Of course.
Now, the good. We've got three women referees who will be, seeing action in the new M-League season, which kicks off on Friday. Nurul Ain Izzati Zainal says she is looking forward to create history, as she will join the likes of Nur Akmal Anwar and the famous Rita Ghani as they ink their names in the history books. Nur Akmal and Rita will officiate the Super and Premier League matches, while Nurul Ain will be part of the President's Cup and the Youth Cup. What is amazing is that Nurul Ain went on record, this was after we interviewed her in 2013, and she went on record to thank her parents for supporting her, saying that they have sacrificed their time and money so that she could build her career in as a referee. So, you know, well done to her parents, and we wish to see more parents supporting their kids, especially when it comes to sports. Also, kudos to the Football Association of Malaysia for finally doing this. And this will further boost the sport and the participation of women in football.
Yeah.
And on the same note, the Japanese Football Association have also said that they will introduce a new fully professional women's league that will kick off in September 2021. And the catch is that the teams will require at least one female executive in each club.
Okay.
Now, women with years of service playing for the Nadeshiko Japan, which is the country's national team, may be recruited to fill the posts in the league. And the existing women's Nadeshiko League, I hope I pronounced that right, will continue as an amateur competition beneath the new professional league. That's good news all over.
This really is a global trend we've been seeing for years, especially in Germany, in the Bundesliga. You have female referees. Why do you think the MFL took this long to implement something like this?
I don't know why they took this long, but more importantly, they've done it. I think that's a better late than never. It should have been done a long time ago, perhaps. We didn't have the talent. Steve Darby, the former Perak coach, he read our article and he pointed out there were several women coaches who were actually referees in the Malaysian league, domestic league, in the 90s. He clarified.
So which, it has been done before.
I went through documents. I can't seem to find any document to pretty much support that. But if that's true, then, you know, we're seeing a these three new faces who are actually continuing what is already there. And to answer your question, what took so long? Perhaps in between, there weren't many, the you know, female referees were not pushed or were not given the motivation to or the opportunity to referee many matches. And, you know, becoming a referee, you've got to clock in hours just like pilots. So it's the same with referees as well. And perhaps finally, Nur Akmal, Rida Ghani, and also Nurul Ain, clocking the hours to prove their salt in the M-League.
Got you. So exciting future for the M-League. We move from the good to the bad.
Okay, I'm not too sure if this falls under good or bad. It really depends on how you view it. But former Puskas Award winner Faiz Subri is no longer selling perfume for a living.
So you know what?
Good.
You know what? I didn't know about this.
He was for a short period. You know, after the whole celebration and the glory of winning the award, he left the Penang FA in 2018, and he was without a team, pretty much teamless, and he had to resort selling perfumes for a living. But he has returned to football, but not in the top tier. He's actually playing for Perlis in the M3 League, so that's the third tier league in the Malaysian league. So despite all the glory winning the award, he's struggling to find his way back into football, and people are pretty much saying that it was just a flash, that attempt, that goal was just, you know, sheer luck, and it was just a flash of the pen. But yeah, whatever it is, Pak Yusubri, hopefully this will motivate you to push yourself, and hopefully we'll see you playing in the top tier of football soon.
Definitely, definitely. From the bad, we move on to the ugly, Harish.
Okay, I'm not too sure if this is good or ugly. Once again, it really depends on the viewer, on the listener's take.
Mm.
Yeah, the political fiasco in Malaysia will naturally hit the national sports scene. The uncertainty will lead to investors adopting the wait-and-see attitude, and the organization of sporting events could be in jeopardy. Then we also have COVID-19 to bear in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Some will say it's you know, business as usual for most of the athletes, but perhaps not so for those preparing for the Tokyo Olympics, as changes within the government could affect the policies and programs carried out by the National Sports Council.
Mm.
I doubt there will be major changes, but you'll never know. I mean, you know, given the current situation, anything can happen.
Yep.
A new leadership could see new faces in certain sports organizations, especially those who have been heavily reliant on the state government funds from, you know, or funds from the federal government, in fact.
Mm.
We have been assured that certain states would not see new Menteri Besar, but that would all change once a new government takes place. And it really depends on the which coalition that's going which will rule the government. So the after effect will naturally spill over to the state.
Mm.
A new education minister hopefully will have sports in mind, in line with the national education philosophy or Falsafah Pendidikan Negara.
Mm.
At the same time, it could also mean a new sports, youth and sports minister for Malaysia. And I'm sure that's music to the ears of many.
Yeah, so you said at the top of this story, not sure whether it's a good or an ugly piece of news, right? Looking a little bit into your crystal ball, where do you foresee?
I wish I had one.
In this, everything's uncertain right now, especially the political climate, but where do you hope, in when you're looking into your crystal ball, that the Malaysian sports scene will be?
I don't want to look so far ahead. Let's just, I really hope that whatever that's going to come after this, the people in charge will assure certainty and stability. I think these two components were severely lacking, despite, you know, narratives and despite talk that, no, we are stable, you know, and things and stuff like that. But it was very clear that it was not stable and nothing was certain.
Mm.
That led to whatever that's happening politically in the country at the moment. So I really hope moving forward, there would be some form of stability and certainty, simply because it's affecting businesses and across the board. It made even worse with the whole COVID-19 and, you know, the US-China trade war and so many things. Markets are not doing well, not only in Asia, but globally as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, we need to move forward quickly and to find ways to manage the impact.
Mm.
The volatility would definitely impact us, but manage the impact simply because that will impact sports as well,
mm.
as in brands would be hesitant to you know, invest or spend money on something like sports. But Daryl, before we end, it's only right for us to thank national hockey goalkeeper S. Kumar,
mm.
who recently announced his decision to retire from international hockey. He has gone through a series of heartbreaks while donning the national jersey.
Mm.
He lost his dad, his 3-year-old son, and he also served a ban for doping for a doping violation.
Mm.
And you know what's even the most disappointing bit is that the 40-year-old has never played in the Olympics.
Oh.
But as the nation's longest-serving goalkeeper, Kumar has done so much for the nation. He's played in 321 international matches since 1999. That's like, you know, salute to Kumar.
So
he
long,
will now coach the national juniors, you know, on behalf of all of us. I think I can speak on behalf of all of us, Daryl. Kumar, thank you once again and all the best.
That was Harish Deol, editor of 2213, with this week's news roundup on the good, the bad and the ugly. On to our feature this week, we go to the world of Muay Thai, one of the more popular forms of martial art in Malaysia, and we talk to Imran Harif, who together with his partners have been running a gym with a unique approach which provides underprivileged and at-risk youths for an opportunity of a better life. discover Muay Thai, which operates as a fitness center, but also works as a social initiative that hosts 4-month courses for these youths. Getting his inspiration after a trip to Thailand, on the show this week, Imran Harif gives us the lowdown on Discover Muay Thai.
My journey in martial arts started since I was actually 12, 13 years old.
Okay.
So back then, I was still in high school, and the opportunity to actually learn Muay Thai, to be specific, was not much. So in Malaysia, Muay Thai wasn't as popular as how it is now. So my passion in martial arts still covers other forms of martial arts, of course. One of it is Silat, Krav Maga, Jiu-Jitsu, and I really love watching movies and action movies and see Bruce Lee and all that. It's like my idol.
Mm.
In general, sports. So I was quite athletic back then. I was very active in competing in sports. Fast forward years after that, I still feel that I need to try Muay Thai. So I went to Thailand with the aim to learn Muay Thai. And what I actually experienced was something else. It's actually more than just learning Muay Thai. It's actually learning what Muay Thai can actually give to a person. So not just the technical skills on how to become an athlete or a fighter. As I was in Thailand at that time, I learned that Muay Thai is a martial arts that give people the values of respect, discipline, and honor.
Mm.
And that three values is something that we keep close and I use until today at Discover Muay Thai Academy. Mm. At that trip in Thailand, I was there actually for months. And it was at this village called Cha Long Town, which is up north of Phuket, and it's about 45 minutes away from Patong, from Bangla Road. What I actually experienced over there is hundreds of Muay Thai camps, they call it. And in that Muay Thai camps, there's actually dorms where kids, there were thousands, almost hundreds of thousands of kids living in the gym. As I was staying there and learning Muay Thai months after months, I started to become very curious. Because these kids, who is very nice to us, who give us good hospitality, who wake us up from our sleep to go for our 10-kilometer jog in the morning.
They wake you up?
Yeah, wake us up. And then, especially if we have late nights.
Mm.
And then they will also make sure that we are happy all the time, ask us if we have eaten our lunch, our breakfast and all that.
That's the Thai hospitality.
Exactly.
For you, right?
And then as months progresses, of course, we started to have a bit of a relationship with the community over there. So I asked some villagers, who are these kids? Who are these kids who, after their morning run, they'll open up their books and they started doing homework on a Muay Thai ring?
Mm.
Who are these kids who actually, after their morning run, they will be the one who hold Muay Thai pads for us? Who are these kids actually? And they told me that these kids are from the big cities in Thailand, such as Bangkok, Chiang Mai, Chiang Rai. And they're not here just solely for the reason to fight. They are here to actually change themselves. Because they are actually victims of child trafficking, being domestically abused at a very young age, victims of rape, orphans, and they were brought to this village to use Muay Thai as a form of rehabilitation, to up their self-esteem.
Mm.
So I said to myself that one day, if I have the chance, I want to do something similar in Kuala Lumpur.
And you did, you came back and opened Discover Muay Thai, which we'll get on to it later. But I just want to talk about a point you mentioned earlier, that back when you were curious about Muay Thai, mm-hmm. it wasn't popular in Malaysia especially.
Yeah.
Fast forward to today, it is really popular, right? What would you attribute that popularity growth to?
I would say through television, through social media, people are starting to appreciate a form of martial arts that uses the eight limbs.
Mm.
So Muay Thai is known as the art of eight limbs.
Oh, the science of eight limbs.
Right? So the science of eight limbs, that's right. So where you use both your punches, your elbows, your knees, and both your shins for kicks. So unlike other martial arts, which is still a phenomenal martial arts to witness, there's different type of aspects, such as two form of martial arts. So two limbs, which is just like boxing, or grappling, like going on ground and rolling.
Mm.
So like Muay Thai is actually a stand-up game, and where it is actually enjoyable to watch.
Mm.
And I think that it has grown popular as well due to some terrific fighters from Muay Thai, which has performed in kickboxing rules as well.
Mm. So you mentioned that you did all the other martial arts, right? You did Jiu-Jitsu, you did a bit of Silat, a bit of MMA, and Muay Thai was always in your mind. I guess you never took the step to try it first, right?
Yep.
Is it the case where if you do Muay Thai, you kind of learn the lessons of all the other martial arts in Muay Thai? Is that the case?
One thing that Muay Thai has given me, other than the fact that the values that I just mentioned, is actually a form of being really fit that I just could not actually describe.
Okay.
Because you need stamina, you need strength. Mm. At the same time, your cardio must be off the roof.
Okay.
Because it's not just about knowing how to punch to kick, but you need to have a mental strength to actually go through the whole training.
Mm.
So that's why I love Muay Thai, in terms of how it is technically.
So getting a little bit into the sport, there's a technical progression of athletes or rather students of Muay Thai and divided into different levels of knowledge called Han, right? Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit on this?
Han is a grading system that was introduced in Malaysia quite recently.
Just in Malaysia? Or
no, it is actually globally.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah, but in Malaysia recently. Mm. Just like Taekwondo, where you have your belts, white, yellow, blue, black, red. Muay Thai, they call it Han. If I'm not mistaken, there's about 16 or 18 Han.
Mm.
I'm number 6.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, I think that's something that my master wouldn't want me to say. Because he will ask, you can't remember how many Han there is in total? Why? Is because it's not easy to get up there. So you just focus Han after Han after Han.
Mm.
So in Malaysia, the Han system is actually quite new. And it gives an opportunity for martial arts enthusiasts, who was me back then, to actually see Muay Thai as more than just learning for self-defense or for fitness, but to actually achieve something.
Right.
So to have a great Han 1, 2, 3, it is actually, it has this form of accomplishment.
Sure.
Yeah, because not all want to become fighters.
Mm. But it's that sense of, when you look at Taekwondo, Karate, for example, right? The next goal, everyone's always looking to get to get that next belt. Is that the same?
Yes, that's the same. And I would say that is one of the main purposes on why Han is introduced.
Mm. Yeah. So you were talking a little bit about how you have to be at your top-notch fitness to be able to do Muay Thai. So I guess in a way, it's not that accessible. Am I wrong?
I would say that Muay Thai now is accessible to people from all walks of life. Kids and even old people.
Okay.
The youngest gym member at my gym, he is a young boy at the age of 5, 6. The oldest that we have is close to 65 years old.
Oh, wow.
And why? It's because now there's such thing as Muay Thai fitness, where they don't only just do Muay Thai punching like how fighters do. We do a bit of jumping jacks, fitness, lifting weights. So that all of this makes the training much more enjoyable and accessible to many.
So it's not sparring all the time?
No, it's not sparring all the time. Unless you go for a fight this training track.
Talking a little bit about applicable lessons, I guess life lessons from Muay Thai that you can bring into your daily life. What have you learned?
One thing that Muay Thai teaches me, which is the most important thing, and I think that most Muay Thai practitioners would agree with me, is respect. When you learn Muay Thai, you have to first respect your teacher. When you go in the ring, if you are a fighter, the first thing that you have to respect, or the first person that you have to respect, is your opponent, the one that you're about to punch.
Mm.
So it's actually different than when you see WWE on television.
Sure.
Or when you see sometimes, I wouldn't name names, but competitions which they have to act or they have to carry their belts, thingy-thingy. Muay Thai, you have to first bow and you have to really respect the surroundings, your opponent. So you cannot really brag. So this keeps you very humble.
Yeah.
And to me, respect also teaches not only to your teacher, but it also you have to respect opponent, your parents and all that. So this value is very important. Hence why in Phuket, that village, the Muay Thai village that I've been through, the first thing they teach you is respect.
So I guess Muay Thai in a way is, as physical as it is, it's also very spiritual in the other sense, right?
Yeah.
Talking a bit about the people that do come into your gym that do practice Muay Thai, do you find that most of them come in mostly for self-defense or fitness or both or mix of both?
I think both, but number one is always for fitness. 90% of our gym members are female and they go in for the purpose of fitness. Number two is for self-defense, of course. When you learn Muay Thai, you automatically learn how to actually throw a kick or a punch or an elbow. And it somehow gives you this form of addiction or adrenaline where you actually want to know more and more and more and more. It then will lift up your self-esteem. So I would say that it is a hybrid of both.
In your opinion, seeing all the Muay Thai fighters have been through your gym, what's the quality that makes a great Muay Thai fighter?
Number one will always be discipline. No matter how good of a fighter you are, if you don't have discipline, it's going to be really tough. Because sometimes you have issues like you're a good fighter, you have the best technical skills ever, and then you perform a few of your first matches and you won all. But then one day suddenly you have issues, personal issues with your wife or your girlfriend, and then you are late for training. You become very lazy, complacent. You think that you're a big superstar. And that is actually the start of a downfall.
Okay.
So discipline, self-discipline, and mental strength is so important.
That was Imran Harif, co-founder of the sports social initiative Discover Muay Thai. More of that conversation coming up. Do stay tuned. This is Bar None on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and tune into Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Today in the program, we have been in conversation with Imran Harif, the co-founder of Discover Muay Thai, a gym that, while operating as a fitness center, also aims to solve the issues of urban poverty by training underprivileged youths. With the tagline Birth of the Hero, the co-founder trio at Discover Muay Thai takes in and houses these youths for 4 months, teaching them not just the art of Muay Thai, but they are taught English, motivational classes, and also doing voluntary work. Here's Imran Harif, one of the co-founders, explaining more.
When we opened up Discover Muay Thai at the start, the aim was to just really help people. Because I believe that there are many troubled youth out there who love sports so much, and they cannot use and they don't have the opportunity to actually express themselves. So when Discover Muay Thai was set up as a social enterprise, it must be a balance between both. Okay. Making money, so we need to get profit.
Sure.
At the same time, we have to impact a certain community. In our case, the underprivileged youth. Most of our boys since batch one, so each batch there's 8 boys, and all of them are from the B40 communities,
okay,
urban poor, and most of them, I would say 90% of them since 2015 are part of gang members.
Okay.
And when we bring them to Discover Muay Thai Academy and live with us together for 4 months, undergoing a very structured, at the same time, structured, rigid, at the same time, intensive routine, this routine somehow changed them. Bit by bit, they see life more than just what it is back at home or surround when they are surrounded by their gang members. They know that at Discover Muay Thai Academy, at Dragon Muay Thai in Jalan Alor Bukit Bintang, it is almost like a safe haven where they can just go up there and they can actually meet our counselors, our English teachers, our ustad, our Muay Thai trainers, everything. So that is why, and that is the environment that I tried to build. At that time, back in 2015, it was just me alone.
Yeah.
So it wasn't easy. But now we have our teachers, we have our wardens, we have our, people say, experts.
You have a whole roster.
That's right. So that we can focus on business as well at the same time.
You were the head honcho of Discover Muay Thai, but you also roped in 2 partners, right?
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about, I guess, how you guys met and how you guys established the center together.
I think we were quite lucky because we started knowing each other when we were working for this NGO called My Harapan, Malaysian Youth Trust Foundation. And of course, when you work for NGO, you actually have most of your heart with helping people. So when we were working at My Harapan, there were so many programs at grassroots level where we have to actually live together with communities from urban poor and rural areas to actually know what's the need and why is it that they are in that situation. So one of the co-founder, his name is Khairul Azri. Khairul Azri is responsible in handling our financials and also our day-to-day operations.
Very important.
Very important. So that because on one hand, you have to run the gym, so you need someone at the back end to actually work on that. The other one, his name is Sanul John Tenderhal from Sabah. He's also from My Harapan. What he is good at and the main portfolio that he is handling is the academy in terms of recruitment stage, making sure that these boys are okay, they're fine and all that stuff. And then there's me, everything lah. The coolie.
Yeah. But I guess in terms of the training itself, right?
Yep.
The coaches you employ, where do you source them from?
Our trainers at Dragon Muay Thai in Jalan Alor Bukit Bintang, the trainers for our 8 chosen boys. The first one, his name is Kru Selatan. Or his real name is Kru Asanai Paniran.
Okay.
He's from South Thailand. He is a 3-time WMC World Muay Thai Champion.
Okay.
The second trainer, his name is Kru Jack or Kru Nontachai. He's a 1-time World Muay Thai Champion. He is also from South Thailand. And then that's myself. So the three of us will always make sure that these boys learn everything that they can from Muay Thai, making sure that they are learning not only the skills but also the values of it. To all of our boys, especially from the academy, they know that they can go from zero to hero. I think that one success story that I can share is about one of our boys from batch number 2 2017, if I'm not mistaken. He is from Bintulu, Sarawak.
Okay.
So we got a call from Persatuan Muay Thai Negeri Sarawak saying that we have a boy. He has no experience in Muay Thai. And the problem about him is he has discipline issues. He likes to merempit. And when he merempit, he gambles.
Okay.
And he got caught many times. Mm. And we don't want him to get into trouble. Mm. So I asked them, why you call me? You know, is it because he have a problem with the law that you want to get in touch with us so that he can escape from the law or things like that? But it's not actually the case. They convinced us saying that this kid actually loves Muay Thai. But he just does not have the platform to shine.
Sure.
So his father works carrying gas from house to house.
Okay.
And he helps his father then. Even though he's in Bintulu, which is quite an urban area, but getting to his place is not easy. It's quite rural.
Mm.
And it's actually the first time for him to fly from Bintulu, Sarawak to KL.
Yeah,
and our gym is located just a few kilometers away from KLCC, Twin Tower.
Yeah.
So just imagine during one of the morning run, during the first few days, the morning run passes KLCC Park. When all the boys started running, he's the one who will just sit and just see the KLCC Park because he only sees it on TV and people talking about it.
Oh,
and
nice.
You can see that in newspapers. So this type of exposure is so important. Even during the academy, he is still this type of person who is shy, but at the same time, look uninterested. But when it comes to Muay Thai, he's number one.
Gotcha.
He will want to perform. He will want to be there first.
Gotcha.
So fast forward months after that, we see potential in him going really, really good in Muay Thai. We call a few clubs in Sarawak. And he competed at domestic level where he attended championships just at around Sarawak. And then he started to create a name. So Sukma, he got selected to represent Sarawak for Sukma before this. And he won a gold medal for Sarawak.
That's great.
And then last year in March, I got a call from his dad and also from Persatuan Muay Thai saying that, hey, Awangku Abdul Rahman has been chosen to represent Malaysia for Muay Thai kickboxing rule in Manila. And then I'm like, okay, I don't want to give him too much hope. I just want him to focus on his training. And he won silver for Malaysia.
Oh, that's nice.
So the first person who actually called me and saying that he won silver at that time, he's very excited, even though I was watching TV at that time, is actually his dad. So we're proud of him. Mm. And he is now a role model and an icon to many youth, even in Sabah, Sarawak.
Mm. I think it wouldn't be possible without DMT, you know?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's giving people an opportunity,
yeah,
the right platform, and that is how we can actually see that birth of a hero.
I think another thing that you guys do is also a sense of belonging, right, to a community.
Yeah.
For like the kid you just mentioned, you know, you guys bring people together, letting them know they're not alone, and in a way that they can rebuild with a bunch of friends together, right?
It is so important to not neglect those who needed help the most. There are so many street kids outside there. You don't realize that. We are so busy with our daily lives. Sometimes you don't see that underneath a bridge below, next to Maju Junction, heading to Chow Kit, you can see so many street kids just living at the streets and most of them doing nothing.
Mm.
But you never know that out of those kids, they can actually become somebody. Recently, we actually opened doors for the homeless community. And of course, in doing so, there's a lot of things that they can actually do with us, where they can actually go to Discover to Dragon Muay Thai at 4th floor in Jalan Alor and get help, meet our counselors, meet our teachers, meet our doctors from Hospital Beyond Boundaries. We give them food, we give them a place to shower, and so that they are ready to go out there and do something about their lives.
Mm. So you, I guess your vision is not just to build athletes. That's not... it's great if that happens, but I guess that's not the core vision of DMT, right?
That's right.
Your ultimate goal is to get people off the streets and do something beneficial with their lives.
To give them a better life.
Mm. You reached out to several families, I guess, when you were starting out at Batch 1, right?
Mm.
And knocking on doors and PPR flats. Were people responsive to your idea?
It was quite difficult. When we first started this, the first thing that I got a lot is... they'll say that, dude, kau ni nak buat cult ke? Are you trying to do a gang member? And then, especially like, you see like 8 boys from the streets, all from gangs before, learning Muay Thai,
right,
you know? But it wasn't easy, of course.
Mm.
So we knocked from door to door at a PPR around Sri Pantai, which is quite amazing. You have Jalan Telawi overlooking Sri Pantai, but people don't know that Sri Pantai, PPR, is where resettlement of squatters.
Mm.
So they have moved there.
Right.
And most of these kids over there, they don't go to schools. So what are we doing about it? We have physical space, nice. We have a futsal court downstairs, but most of these kids, they don't go to school. They commit crime. Because of that, it is not healthy for the community. So yeah, at the start, we have to knock on doors and we have to talk to parents. We have to talk to penghulu kampung. We have to talk to so many people saying that, hey, I'm doing this program. You know, do you have a kid that you know who would love to join Muay Thai? And Muay Thai at that time, I would say, even at that time, though it's growing, it wasn't as popular as now as we are talking. So we finally get 8 boys. But fast forward now, when we did batch 3 and 4, every time when we blast on social media or when we start to announce that we are making another batch, we receive hundreds of applicants. Mm. And of course, this comes from the help of even our media friends, such as BFM, radio, television, and all that stuff as well.
So people actually come to you
these days.
So talking a bit about the growth, right, and how much operations and the scene has changed from 2015 batch 1 to now batch 4. Tell me a little bit about the major differences you experienced in that 4 years.
When I first did this in batch 1, other than the fact that I get a lot of people saying that this is a cult or a gang movement, it was tough because there were not many supporters, not many partners. But I understand, because good things take time and people want to see results. But those who stick with me from the start will stick with me until now, such as our counselor until now, our Muay Thai teachers until now. So they're with me till now. And I would say that the major difference now is that we have a big team where it actually gives me some room to breathe. And also not give me so much.
You still
stress.
Do everything, but exactly.
But now I can delegate a bit more.
That's great.
So yeah,
talking a little bit about, I guess you're talking about how, you know, further down the line you start getting hundreds of applications. How do you pick 8 guys or 8 teens from that hundreds of applications? What's the selection process
like? It's tough. It's very difficult. I pity my team having to go through that stage. Because usually it is Sanol, he's the one who will handle the recruitment part. And then we have our panel from our partners who will actually select as well.
Okay.
Number one is that they have to be in the B40 community, which is a household income of below 3,000 ringgit. I think 2,500 to 3,000 ringgit. Mm. Number two, it's either that boy is a school dropout and also once joined gang or is still part of a gang member. Lack of discipline, uninterested to pursue study. So this 4 or 5 criteria is the most important one.
Okay.
And then once we determine that, we have to interview them. And then when we interview them, we see boys who actually want to do it, who are actually willing to live everything away for 4 months, because 4 months is actually quite a long time. Put it away and then stay with us in a foreign environment, because they not only live amongst them, they live with people and also fighters from Thailand. Their fitness coach is from Brazil. Most of our customers, they are expats from other countries. And at night, they have to actually run the gym themselves. So are they ready for that? So really taking them out of their comfort zone.
Sure. In what cases that during the interview stage that you will reject someone?
Some cases is that they're not even underprivileged.
Okay. Oh, okay.
That happens a lot.
Okay.
Some cases is that they have health issues. Again, we have to be careful with that as well. Because if you want to do something, but let's say you are not 100%, not to say fit, but healthy in terms of if you have diseases and all that. So we can't take, unfortunately.
Sure. Because 4 months of, you know, intensive training does sound takes a toll on you.
We don't really sell Muay Thai at first. What we sell is actually a chance to change your life using sports.
Got you.
The teaching them Muay Thai part is our job during the academy.
So the program now, I guess the Discovery Muay Thai Academy, the age group is currently 15 to 30 years old, right? Are there any plans to, I guess, increase the range, or you guys are comfortable with this range?
We're very comfortable with this range. It is an academy, a Muay Thai academy by the youth. So it has to be for the youth. The reason even we take 15 years old was a unique case. And the reason why we took in the 30 years old boy is also a unique case. So usually most of the ages comes from between 18 to 25.
Okay, a majority of them.
Majority, that's right.
Bring us through a day in the life at DMT Academy.
Yeah, they wake up. They have to wake up at 6 a.m. in the
6
morning.
6 a.m., okay.
During that time, lights on. 6 a.m., the non-Muslims will go to the kitchen and they will start to prepare breakfast, light ones, like biscuits, coffee or and all that. And the Muslims will start praying. Usually their super prayer starts at 6:15, 6:20, and they'll pray for 20 minutes. 6:30, they're on standby to jog for 10 kilometers to KLCC Park. So that's a 10 kilometer run back and forth. So that is like their warm up. And then when they're back at the gym, they'll have a fitness class with our instructors. And usually for our fitness instructor, it's different than a Muay Thai instructor, even though sometimes they actually share the same content. At that time, it is crucial for them to actually build their strength, their stamina, their endurance. And then after their training, let's say at about 10 or 11, they'll start to rest, take a shower, and then they will have to cook. So we provide them with raw food materials such as chicken, fish, eggs, in partnership with the Malaysian Food Aid Foundation. So every 2 weeks, the kitchen is stocked up.
Okay.
Rice and all that stuff. So, but then they have to cook amongst themselves.
And who will teach them how to cook?
That's the thing. Once a month, we'll call in a chef, so-called chef, to teach them cook.
Okay.
And the chef that we call in is supposed to teach them a healthy food, but they still end up doing nasi goreng and all that stuff, which is understandable. Sometimes they get really tired, so I just close one eye.
Sure.
It is important for them to eat together. Every time they lunch or dinner, they have to eat together.
Okay.
Because that is how they actually unite as a family, as a group, because our boys, they come from different race, religion and background. And then after lunchtime, at Mondays and Wednesdays, English class, basic English communication class. On Tuesdays is a session with a counselor, whom they call Ibu, mother.
Okay.
And then on Thursday, they go out and they do volunteering work, which is gardening. Sometimes they have to do a bit of cleaning stuff for the community downstairs. Mm. And then on Fridays, usually what they'll do is they have entrepreneurship class where they learn on project management, etc. Okay.
So I guess you guys are in collaboration with various social other, like I saw a picture with BG initiative, one of your boys went to there. Tell me about the other.
Yeah, like for this batch, we did with Eat, Shoots and Roots, also a social enterprise.
Yep.
And that's why they go for gardening for this batch. They actually went there this morning.
Nice.
So they have to clear up their gardens and then they have to plant new things and all that stuff.
Mm.
But from the previous batch we did with BGBG, where they have to work on project basis to actually build structures and all that stuff. This kind of things is important because it gives them additional skills, because not all of them, most of them are school dropouts. So they don't even have PT3. So these skills is very important, carpentry and all that. But also why I believe that it is so important to fit in volunteering work is because it is important for them to learn to give back. Because at academy, everything is given to them. Food, training. You have the best Muay Thai trainers in the country. You have food. You have a place to stay. You have shelter. So it's important sometimes to give back and learn it the hard way. To really go under the sun and berkebun and also build things and things like that. So that it keeps them humbled and grounded. So that's why we keep on doing this. We keep on doing this batch after batch.
And I guess 4 months, just putting myself in your shoes, right? You're almost like the headmaster of these 8 boys for that 4 months, right? And when you put 8 teenage boys together, sometimes things will go, you know.
Not sometimes, most of the
times. Most of the times, right? So tell me a little bit, you know, what are the most challenging thing about managing these boys?
Because we did this for so many times already, we cannot expect how their behavior can be in the first week, in the third week, and towards the end. During the first week, just imagine on the first day, most of these boys, because they are once gang members, they like to have different type of hairstyles. Some of them rambut merah, some of them with a tail at the back, some of them dah memang botak and things like that. So what we did was, they have this ego, you know, during that first week, they, oh, I'm from this gang and blah 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 blah, I'm a gangster and things like that. So we botak their hair, they have to
everyone botak. Looks
everyone
same.
Will look the same. And then the
Ibu, I'm sure you get resistance from that.
A lot.
Yeah.
And then the Ibu will come, which is the counselor. So just imagine, the counselor just have a 5-minute session with them and all of them started crying.
Oh, wow.
So in the end of the day, you know, they're not so bad boys after all. And if they think that they can punch or beat people just because they think that they're strong enough, our world champions will tell them, sure, go to the punching bag and try to punch and kick it. They can't even last for 5 minutes and they become tired. So during that first week is really putting everything in order. During the third week is when they gel together as a team, and some of them will start to have a bit of making fun of each other and fights, things like that happen. We have to manage all that.
What are the most significant changes that you see in the boys after that 4 months is done? And do you guys actually keep track after those 4 months when they go back? You know, what's their progress like?
It is so important after 4 months for us to keep track of them and for them to always be with us, even though they're no longer with us physically in the gym. Number one is we have this group where our boys from previous batch, these alumni, will come and check themselves in at the gym once every month. They'll come and then they'll just check into us.
Okay.
They'll meet the teachers and all that stuff.
Mm.
Number two, of course, thanks to technology, the WhatsApp group is everything now. So we can actually communicate with them, ask them how are they doing and all that. Also, most importantly, the one thing that not many people have the privilege to experience this is that once you are associated to Discover Muay Thai Gym, the gym is yours for the rest of your life. So for them, wherever they are, whenever they have problems, whenever they need something, whenever they need to talk to somebody, they just go to Bukit Bintang, they go to the fourth floor and they can meet us. So they have this feeling that this gym, this place where they spent 4 months, is actually their house. So it is a safe haven. for them.
And off the air, you were telling me some of your graduates even end up working for the gym, right?
It is so important for them to be employed. Mm. So we hire them as Muay Thai instructors. Mm. Yeah.
Coming a bit from, I guess, an underprivileged background, these boys, compared to yourself, they've been to many more obstacles than you have, I guess, in life. Were there any valuable lessons, as much as you taught them, have they taught you any lessons?
Doing this for years, I learn a lot from them. It opens up my eyes because each boy, they have different cases. They have their own stories. So every time when I hear their stories, it's a life lesson, not just for me, but to even my friends and the people close to me. It keeps us more determined to actually do something and to actually push to do greater things for these people and also for the community.
Mm. I was doing a bit of research into your gym and I discovered your blog. I was reading a couple of stories on your blog and all the stories seem to have that kind of personal connection to the boys, right? Each post is about one particular boy telling a bit about his life story, getting into their struggles of their lives and the struggles and how they, you know, are succeeding with Muay Thai. Do you think that sense of that personal connection is something that's lost in today's competitive nature of martial arts?
Yeah. I think that is so true. In martial arts, I would say that now people are starting to see this as a form of entertainment. They love watching McGregor on television. They love watching Khabib and all that stuff. But at grassroots level, we should also see local talents, local fighters who is actually struggling to even get or compete. So it is important for us to highlight personal stories so that people know where they come from. Mm. And they will actually get more opportunities if their stories are heard. So at Discover Muay Thai, we want to make sure that each of them have a story that they can actually share and benefit them in the future.
That's great. Yeah. Looking a bit into the future for the academy and the gym, right now you're based in Jalan Alor, Bukit Bintang, but your goal is to bring the academy to Langkawi and to Sabah and Sarawak. Why specifically these three places?
Currently, we have in Bukit Bintang, of course, also in Puchong, but that is quite central, which is Kuala Lumpur, Selangor. Like I said, there are so many people who want to be part of Discover Muay Thai Academy, but it is difficult for us to actually get most of them here. So over the years, there were so many talks happening between us and even state government, NGOs, and even corporate and individuals who want to expand and want us to actually do at their areas. Langkawi is because it is up north. Langkawi is a beautiful island and there are people there talking to us to open up a camp. It has to impact in the academy way for boys or for people from the Kedah or from the Utara region. At the same time, in Sabah and Sarawak, there are many strong fighters, strong boys over there. Even my co-founder, he is also from, he comes from a Kadazan ethnicity. And over there, we want to share what we can actually do to the kids over there as well. So we are in talks with the Persatuan State Association over there to link up with gyms over there for us to bring our panel, our teachers and all that to do our academy over there so that we can actually expand and impact more youth using martial arts and also alternative education.
Great stuff. Looking forward to the openings of the other branches.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that as well.
Other than that though, what are DMT's plans for 2020 and beyond?
For 2020, right now, batch 4 is happening. Hopefully, by end of this year, there'll be batch 5. So it's going to be a very busy year.
So this will be the first year there are two batches.
Yes. Ah. And then at the same time, we are actually doing a program. It is happening right now also at Bestari Jaya.
Okay.
A program with young school students from schools around that area, especially estate. So in a way to actually uplift them, their self-esteem. Mm. And also this year, maybe, but this is still not confirmed yet, together with Kementerian Belia dan Sukan, KBS, as part of Ribbon Kuning, to do programs for once a week for 3 months at Henry Gurney Correctional Centre in Teluk Mas, Melaka.
Okay.
At the same time, the gym is ongoing. So there's a,
so like there's a lot split of, yourself in two.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things happening at the same time.
Good luck for, I guess, this year and beyond. Last question, what are your hopes for the Malaysian Muay Thai scene for the foreseeable future?
Of course, for Malaysia to win at all championships, not just Asian, but world championships. For Malaysia to actually have more Muay Thai athletes who actually is driven to create greatness through Muay Thai, not just from the technical skills, but to be an inspiration to many young people out there.
That was Imran Harif, co-founder of the Sports Social Initiative in the heart of the city, Discover Muay Thai. To find out more information about them, do go check out their page at facebook.com/DMT Malaysia. with that, we've come to the end of this week's Bar None. Do remember that if you'd like to revisit the interview again, you can head over to our website, www.bfm.my/Bar None. If you'd like to get in touch with us on Twitter, at BFM Radio. And also don't forget that the best way to keep in touch with our latest updates is by downloading our BFM app via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Daryl Ong. Thanks for listening to this week's Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Tune in again next week, same time, for more, right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.